Hi, this is Nancy Clare. Welcome to episode 29 of Speaking of Mysteries. We took a break last week to attend BoucherCon, and it was, in a word, fantastic. It was wonderful to catch up with longtime friends and meet some new ones. I had a chance to sit down and share a drink and hors d'oeuvres with Jay Kingston Pierce of The Rap Sheet, meet Mike Stotter of Shots, the UK-based crime and thriller e-zine, as well as put a face to the byline for Ali Kareem. Jeff, the J in J. Kingston, Pierce, does such an excellent job rounding up BoucherCon, I strongly urge you to read what he has to say. I also had a chance to meet ProPublica.com senior reporter Sebastian Rotella, whose Triple Crossing I reviewed for a major West Coast newspaper that Sebastian and I used to work for, but shall remain nameless for the purposes of this podcast. Triple Crossing was a remarkable suspense thriller that combined the pursuit of counterterrorism and international crime conglomerates from the line, the border between San Diego and Tijuana, right down to the lawless land that surrounds the triple border of Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay. On December 9th, Sebastian's main character, Valentin Pescatore, is back in The Convert Song. Speaking of Mysteries will publish its interview with Sebastian on December 8th. This week's guest is Craig Robertson, who is in town for BoucherCon with his partner, Alexandra Sokoloff. I first met Craig in 2012 at the first ever Bloody Scotland Crime Writers Conference in Stirling, Scotland, where Craig lives. Before Bloody Scotland, I fancied myself a fan of Scottish crime fiction. I had read William McIlvaney, the father of tartan noir, Val McDermott, Ian Rankin, Denise Mina, and Louise Welsh. I found out that I had only scratched the surface of the embarrassment of riches that is Scottish crime fiction. I'm now a devoted fan of the aforementioned, as well as Craig, whose interview will follow when I'm done quelling, Peter May, Gordon Brown, not the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Alex Gray, Lynn Anderson, Malcolm McKay, Carol Ramsey, Christopher Brookmeyer, Catriona McPherson, and probably another half dozen that I can't recall right now. For a country with a population just shy of 5.5 million people, I'd say there's a cultural predisposition to not just crime writing, but really, really good crime writing. In 2012, Craig told me that Scottish crime writers saw themselves as distinct from English crime writers. Val McDermott agreed. She summed it up this way. It comes from an essential cultural divergence, she said. It's a different country up here. Scotland has a different cultural history. We have a different history. And Scottish crime writers see a line of descent not coming through Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers, but through James Hogg's Confessions of a Justified Sinner, Jekyll and Hyde, and Conan Doyle, to the present day's Willie McIlvaney, the begetter of tartan noir as we know it now. We don't have the millstone of Agatha Christie and her middle-class settings around our neck. We have a much greater concern with the psychological, the ethical, the moral questions. We have a black humor that invests the work with, again, a difference. The English are much more genteel about their humor in general. In Craig's most recent novel, The Last Refuge, a standalone, he went even further than the more remote islands of Scotland, all the way to the Faroe Islands, that lie in the North Atlantic between Iceland and Scotland, or in other words, to the ends of the earth. Here's Craig Robertson. Hi, welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. I have Craig Robertson here, who I've had to hunt down across continents. But we're presently in West Hollywood at Quality Restaurant and just finished breakfast. So welcome, Craig.
Thank you.
Craig is a Craig is a Scottish writer, and I think an undiscovered talent in the United States. We're going to talk about his most recent book, The Last Refuge, which is a standalone, correct?
It's a standalone, but it may become a series.
You're anticipating one of my questions.
It's a bad habit.
So my first question is, Peter May goes to Lewis Island, which is part of the Hebrides, and Anne Cleves goes to the Orkneys. But you had to go to the Faroe Islands. So what's a nice Scottish writer doing in an even further north, and why the Faroes?
Well, I guess maybe partly because Peter's done the Western Isles and Anne's done Shetland, so they've been there and stuck the flag in those countries already, so I had to go a little bit further. And it was almost by chance. I was going to set another book in my Glasgow series with a part of it being set abroad. The storyline, which I'm almost certainly not going to use now because I've tried this book twice and didn't get there, was of a body washing up in the Clyde, a young woman, and she was traced, found to be from Estonia, and the story would take her to the streets of Tallinn. And I was researching Tallinn and found out that Peter Robinson had written the very same book that I was trying to write and set it in Tallinn. Chances of that being pretty high. So I needed somewhere else to set this book. And I basically went on a pin-sticking tour of Europe and came across the Faroe Islands, started to research them, and I got fascinated with the place. And they didn't quite fit the story, but I didn't want to let it go. I knew I wanted to set a story there. They were perfect for a mystery novel, for a crime novel. They have a long, long winter. They have a bleak, desolate landscape. They're Scandinavian noir times 10. And I knew it was a good place to go and kill people. They have the lowest crime rate in the world. And I took that as a challenge to make it
a good place to kill people, even with the lowest crime rate in the world.
Exactly that. And they hadn't, at that point, they hadn't had a murder on the Faroe Islands in 26 years. But I was maybe about 25% into the book, and there was a murder in the Faroe Islands. And I kind of felt it was my fault a little bit. But nevertheless, I pushed on and decided to kill a couple more.
One of the things that struck me as I read it, and this is at least in any part of Europe, is that anonymity in the age of Google and mobile phones is bygone luxury. Did John Callum think or hope that this would not be the case when he went to the Faroes?
He certainly hoped that. He was running away from his former life, and he was hoping he wasn't going to cut. You know, there were little things I probably had to cut corners on to make things work, but that's what fiction's all about, thankfully.
It's suspension of disbelief and poetic license.
All those things, all those excuses. We can claim lots of things under that. But he went to a place where he was unlikely to be questioned. He wanted to get somewhere. Faroe Islands are, for those who don't know, I mean, almost literally in the middle of nowhere. They're only 350 miles due north of Scotland, but stuck between Scotland and Iceland and Norway and then Denmark to the east. But they are a world away in other senses, and that's what John hopes to find.
The underpinnings of The Last Refuge seem to be, and this is common to many mysteries, but the underpinnings seem to be guilt, revenge, and redemption on the part of the characters. But what do you think the greatest motivating emotion of your characters in The Last Refuge is?
I think guilt's probably there, and it's a large part. Although this is, in a sense, a Nordic noir because of the setting, the motivation of guilt is runs through Scottish crime novels and has done right back to Robert Louis Stevenson and James Hogg. That, I guess, it's that whole Scottish problem of just thinking we really have a lot to apologise for.
The whole John Knox syndrome?
We suffer from that as a nation for hundreds of years. The issue of duality as well, that whether there's good within the bad people and bad within the good, and I think that it does lie at the heart of it. And John seeks his own redemption and blames himself for things that as the novel unfolds we find out more as what he may or may not have done.
So, you mentioned John Callum. John Callum is a pretty resourceful guy. And will he return to his former profession with the skill set he demonstrated in the novel? I see potential for a pretty competent detective.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I never considered using John Callum as a detective after this. I think we may have seen the last of John. We may not. if there's going to be a follow-up to this, the plan at the moment, and this is top secret, so obviously we don't tell anyone.
Except
your listeners. I'm exploring the idea of using the Faroese detective, Brody Tunheim, and I got to like him. He, like a lot of characters, it happens. You know, he was only intended to be a supporting role, and I liked him, and I think I'd like to see more of him. Hopefully that means the readers would like to see more of him. So if I'm going to go back to the Faroes, and there's interest from publishers to do that, then I think he would be the vehicle for that.
I think that Craig can read upside down, because my next question is, talk about Inspector Tunheim. Is it, how do you pronounce it? Tunheim?
Well, I pronounce it Tunheim. The Faroese might indeed pronounce it differently, but I think Tunheim.
Are we going to get a chance to read about him again?
I think we will. I've got a premise for another book. I'm currently writing another book in my Glasgow series. Once that's done, the plan is to go back to the Faroes. I've got a storyline in mind. Tunheim would do it. The way for those who haven't read the book, they do not get major crimes on the Faroes. So when very rare occasions a murder happens, they call in the police from Denmark. They're flown in from Copenhagen because the locals, in theory, don't have the skill set to deal with it. But Tunheim is resourceful enough to do it. He's always self-deprecating, letting the Danes who come in.
He's very Columbo-esque, actually.
He is Columbo-esque. And I did actually fear at one point that he was a little too Columbo-esque, because he lets them think that he's not up to the job. Well, he clearly is. And he uses that to blindside them a little bit. And he plays up being a hick from the sticks, but he's much sharper than that. And I like that. He likes to quote Faroese proverbs at Callum, and all the way he's leading him down paths and trying to get under his skin, which he does well. And I like that he did that. So he's a smart guy in a small town.
Well, and then there's Karis. When McCallum first meets her, he's reading a Lee Child book. Mm. You don't mention which one. There are almost 20, so it could be any number.
I think from the setting, I say where it is, and I've now forgotten where it was set, but I'm sure people, Reacher fans, would work it out quite easily.
So I was wondering if Jack Reacher was an inspiration for John McCallum. And then here's a question about Karis. What is the inspiration for her quiff, or did you just want to use that word?
Well, it's a funny thing for a start. I didn't realize the word quiff was unknown to Americans. My partner, Alexandra Sokolov, who's a mystery writer, excellent mystery writer in her own right, she'd never heard the word quiff before, and that kind of surprised me. I'm in dodgy ground here, but I was sitting in a bar in the Faroe Islands doing research, as you must.
And there was a girl. Liquid research, I'm sure.
It's got to be done. You know, it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it. And there was a girl on the other side of the bar who caught my eye. She was attractive, but it wasn't that.
Coffee.
She had a real look about her, and she had the quiff. And she was of the age that I thought Karis was going to be. And Karis is an artist, slightly eccentric and out there. And this girl suddenly kind of embodied it. And I thought, that's kind of what Karis looks like. But I hadn't realised just how literally I'd use her description until the book was finished and I sent it to a contact in the Faroe Islands and he'd read it. And he sent me back a photograph saying, I think I know who Karis is. And sure enough, it was this girl in the bar. So I'd also described her far more closely than I'd made to it. So I don't know how she's going to feel about being the physical inspiration for Karis, but I may well find out.
And then you got to admit, the word quiff is pretty cool.
I've always liked the word quiff. Your listeners can't see me at the moment, but I don't have a quiff, or indeed any hair at all, on the top of my head. So maybe it's just a bit of aspirational.
Well, I think maybe
jealousy.
You should tell our listeners not in the UK what a quiff is.
A quiff would be I believe you might call it a DA.
And it's a bit of a pompadour-esque thing that happens at the top of a hairdo that is very back-combed and quite prominent. Think Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, this girl had a real kind of punk look going on, and it really worked for her. And I just kind of stole it, I guess.
Well, that gets us to our last question, which is, what is your next book? And are you going to return to the Faroe Islands? You've touched on this, but are you going to return to the Faroe Islands or go back to the mean streets of Glasgow?
Well, I think I'm going to do both. I'm currently writing back on the mean streets of Glasgow, which are much meaner than the not-so-mean streets of Tórshavn, the Faroese capital. So I'm, let's say, 90% of the way through a new Glasgow book. It's based around the world of urban exploration, or Urbex, as it's known for short. It's people have a hobby of exploring abandoned buildings. And it also takes them into places that are a bit spooky, leaves them a bit vulnerable, and I'm going to do bad things to them while they're there. So I'm really enjoying it, but I need to get it finished. Once that's all done, the plan is to make a return to the Faroes. We only halfway through the discussion with publishers and etc. So as long as they're all happy with it, I'm definitely happy to go back there. It's a place that lends itself to mystery novels, and I want to keep writing there.
Yeah, you want to out Iceland.
I want to go to Iceland and just push it to the max and leave them standing.
Well, I actually have one more question, and this is something that I ask a lot of writers, especially writers from the UK. The past always is a character in books that take place in the UK. The history, as recent, and I say that as recent as World War II, and as far back as, in the case of Scotland, 300 years, history is always part of the plot, the character motivation. It's the atmosphere of the books are imbued with history. Is that a reality in your lives? I know you live in Stirling, which has got to be one of the most historical places in Scotland and in the world. So am I reading too much into it, or is that an actual thing?
I don't know. I think you might be reading a bit too much, but a lot of you could well be right, because we are imbued with those things without necessarily being aware of it. From the corner of my street, so like 20 yards from my front door, you see Stirling Castle just sitting looming right above us. At the end of the street was the site of the Battle of Stirling Bridge, where William Wallace first defeated the English. That is all around us. But it's history in lots of different ways. I've never set anything further back than part of a book was set in the early 1970s. But it's history also in personal terms, because everyone's got a backstory, and I like to write about people who might have some secrets and things tucked away in their closet. So history in all sorts of senses. But if I write in Glasgow, the story about the historic and abandoned buildings, there's some fantastic things that may only be a couple hundred years old, but they come with sort of ghosts of their own that you can use. And crime and mystery writers, we use everything that's there. We steal from what's around us. So it'd be a crime not to use that kind of stuff when we have the chance to do so.
Well, thank you very much for your time and for joining me for breakfast and for visiting the United States.
It's been a pleasure.
We will, hopefully I'll see you in Scotland later next year.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
So, after listening to my conversation with Craig, I realized there are two Scottish crime writers I left off my list, Anne Cleves and Peter Robertson, and I'm certain there are more. Next week, our guest on Speaking of Mysteries is Steph Cha, whose Beware, Beware, the second of her Juniper Song mysteries, was released earlier this fall. Thank you again for listening. This is Nancy Clare of Speaking of Mysteries.